My name is John Cullen, and I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and curling. It's the story of Broomgate, how a single broom, yes, a broom, turned friends into foes and almost killed the 500-year-old sport of curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
If you've been keeping track of which countries have handled COVID-19 well and which haven't, you've probably heard something about New Zealand.
We are confident. We have eliminated transmission of the virus in New Zealand for now. We have tested almost 40,000 people for COVID-19 in the past 17 days and none have tested positive. Today, there are no active cases in New Zealand.
New Zealand is basically the gold standard of COVID response. They've now managed to completely eliminate transmission twice. They've lifted restrictions and life has, with some precautions, gone back to normal. That's not what Canada has done, or I guess I should say not what most of Canada has done. We actually don't have to look as far as New Zealand to find examples of how the battle against COVID can be won. We have some right here, just out east, where the so-called Atlantic bubble has held up really well over several months now, and where there is now hockey in hockey season with fans in the stands and everything. So, how can the rest of Canada follow the Atlantic province's example? Is it even possible for most of this country? How has Atlantic Canada managed to stamp out COVID, and what kind of price have they paid for doing it? And if it can't work everywhere in Canada, well, what can we all take away from our country's biggest pandemic success story? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Greg Mercer is the Atlantic Canada reporter for the Globe and Mail. A pretty good place in the country to be these days, Greg.
It really is, yeah. It feels definitely a step removed from a lot of the really concerning stories around the coronavirus in the rest of the country and in the rest of the world.
Well, can you start, I guess, by telling me, first, you know, where are you right now? And what's life like where you are? Tell me about precautions in your daily life, what's open, what's closed, to give us something to compare to for those of us outside Atlantic Canada.
Yeah, so I'm in St. John, New Brunswick now, and life feels pretty normal, to be completely honest. You know, you wear a mask when you go into a store here. They just passed a new requirement that you wear them in public places, which was new up until a week ago. So, you know, people go to restaurants, they're going out to dinner, you know, bars are full. There's people going to their kids' hockey games. You know, life feels very normal in that sense. There are still, of course, restrictions. We're not completely back to normal, but, you know, there are a lot of places you can go to in Atlantic Canada where you completely forget there's any pandemic, right? You don't see any reminders of it. There's no cases in those areas. And people are almost living as they always have, with the exception of, you know, you put on a mask when you go into a store.
When we use the term Atlantic bubble out here in Ontario, can you give me a sense of what we're referring to? Like, what is it literally?
So the Atlantic bubble, it just refers to this agreement that the four Atlantic provinces have entered into. They've kind of formed a bubble where if you enter the region, there are certain requirements in terms of self-isolating. But if you live in the region, you can move freely between the four provinces without needing to self-isolate. But for instance, if you came from Ontario and tried to come to New Brunswick, right now you would have to self-isolate in a home for 2 weeks. You can't leave. You can't go out in public. You know, if you want groceries, people have to bring them to you. You have to stay away from really any kind of gathering. So that has been hard on a lot of people who want to come and visit. But once you're here and you're a resident, you can move freely between the four provinces without any of those restrictions. I went to Newfoundland last week, and all it meant was that I had to fill out a form when I landed at the airport that just said, I'm a resident of the region and I'm not required to self-isolate. It was about 2 minutes. So life inside the bubble is pretty good. It's frustrating for people who live elsewhere but might have family or a property here, because it really has caused a lot of challenges in terms of, getting into the region and then kind of, trying to live the way you would like to live when you first arrive.
Well, how strictly has it been enforced? Because usually there's nothing preventing anyone traveling province to province in Canada. Are there border checkpoints? How do people get in?
So if you show up at the airport and you're from a region or you're from outside the region, you have to declare where you're going to be self-isolating, and then they will actually check up on you. There's digital check-ins you can do online or on your phone. They'll actually call you to make sure that you are where you say you are. If you're caught breaking that self-isolation during the two-week quarantine period, you can actually be fined. Some people have been threatened with jail time. I think PEI alone has handed out dozens and dozens of these fines to people who ignored the quarantine rules and decided to, go to a store or go to a friend's house while they were still quarantining. So there is some teeth to it. There's been a few universities in Nova Scotia that have actually expelled students who didn't quarantine for the first 2 weeks when they arrived. So it's a uniquely Atlantic Canadian situation. There's no other part of the country that's doing this right now. It appears to be working, if we're to believe the numbers right now.
Well, tell me about the numbers right now. How well has it worked?
I mean, so well that Atlantic Canada, as a region, has better or lower rates of infection than most developed countries in the world. And until this week, where New Brunswick does have a problem in the Moncton area and the northern area where it shares a border with Quebec, both New Brunswick and Prince Edward Island actually had better numbers than New Zealand, which has been held up as kind of, the model for how countries can beat the coronavirus. Yeah. So, I would say in the last month or so, with the exception of New Brunswick, there's just been a handful of cases around the other three provinces. New Brunswick right now does have a bit of a problem. There's been, I think, 76 new cases in the last week or so, which is the worst we've seen since the pandemic began. So while it is still considered to be under control and still small scale, it is a reminder that it doesn't take long for things to change.
For sure. But also coming from someone recording this in Toronto, which had just in Toronto, 301 new cases yesterday. That sounds like a good deal.
There you go. Yeah, the level of infection is still so low here. And outside of those two areas in New Brunswick, there's really very little risk of infection. And almost all of the cases, in fact, all of the cases have been traced to travel from outside the region. And usually they're caught when someone comes in, they're sick, and they test positive during their self-quarantine period. So in fact, they never actually, they don't spread the virus to anyone because they're following the rules. So in most cases, it has been limited to people who were already sick before they arrived.
How has it impacted the Maritimes in general? Obviously, fantastic that everyone is so safe there. What did it cost? I know, I want to ask you about tourism specifically because I know that's a huge driver for the area.
It's been significant. I mean, there are some industries, the real estate industry says they're actually doing quite well as they are in other parts of the country. And they're seeing a boom in terms of people who might have a connection to Atlantic Canada who are coming home because of the pandemic, who want to return to a place that feels, comparatively safer.
Right.
But you're right. I mean, the tourism sector has been hit very hard by this, as the hospitality sector, right? Anything that requires visitors from outside Atlantic Canada, this has been a very difficult year. And you really can't overstate that. Many, many millions of dollars in revenue have been lost, and a lot of businesses will not return as a result because of this very difficult tourism season.
I want to ask you a little bit about the politics behind it, because it's fascinating to me that four different provincial governments could come together and make this work. What do we know about how that happened, how those decisions were made?
So initially they were working independently. All four provinces closed their borders to any kind of travel. And it wasn't until July that the four provinces said, okay, hold on a minute. We're kind of in a similar situation here. We all have a low level of cases and infections. We have a shared interest in that we need to get our economy started again, and we need to get people traveling within the Atlantic region. So it was the first weekend in July they actually brought in what they called the Atlantic bubble and allowed people who live here to travel between the four provinces. So it did bring a bit of a bump for some of the tourism businesses on PEI. I think most Maritimers took some kind of trip when they could this summer to Prince Edward Island or parts of Nova Scotia, just to get, you know, try to salvage as much summer as they could. But I think there was just a realization that compared to the rest of Canada, they have they had it pretty good, that the risk of removing those border restrictions were pretty low. And so they said, let's get together, let's get people traveling again, get business and commerce going again. And so far it's worked, although this week with the rising cases in New Brunswick, we're already hearing people saying, you know, hold on, should we be worried about people coming from New Brunswick? And there's been a little bit of talk of that. And certainly the other three premiers are undoubtedly watching what's happening here and watching it with concern. But on the whole, it's been a pretty good arrangement for the four Atlantic Canadian provinces.
My name is John Cullen, and I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and curling. It's the story of Broomgate, how a single broom, yes, a broom, turned friends into foes and almost killed the 500-year-old sport of curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
What's made Atlantic Canada so effective at containing this virus, and maybe the things that are unique, like I know geography probably plays a role, but there's got to be things that the rest of Canada can learn as well.
Yeah, there's a few things. Yeah, I think it helps having a geography like this where there's not a lot of borders that you share with regions that are having a lot of trouble, right? I mean, other than New Brunswick, which shares a border with Quebec and Maine, the other three provinces can control who's coming in and coming out a lot more easily. And having just the way people travel here is differently. You see less public transit. The cities are smaller. You know, public gathering is less of an issue. There's less international travel to and from the region. So those things all help. But there are other things beyond just sort of the geographic or the demographic advantages. There seems to be a phenomenon that Atlantic Canadians want to follow the rules around public health. We haven't seen a whole lot of protest over masks. There was actually a guy who tried to get into Moncton last week, somewhat infamous anti-masker. He was turned around at the airport and sent back. And we haven't seen a whole lot of sort of public demonstrations of people pushing back against these restrictions. But by far the biggest factor is this 14-day self-isolation requirement. I mean, that is unique to Atlantic Canada, and that's getting a lot of credit for keeping the region safe. It's simply reducing the risk of exposure of infected people coming into the region.
You talked to a number of public health officials for this piece. What did they point to as some of the unique successes of the Atlantic bubble, or some of the lessons that we can take away, even if maybe they're a little difficult to implement in a place like Ontario or Quebec?
Yeah, I mean, they've learned that the 14-day quarantine restriction is an effective tool, but it has to have exceptions. Otherwise, you completely lock down your economy. I mean, they're learning to do things like allow commercial truckers to come and go without having to do the 2-week quarantine. Otherwise, I mean, those people simply couldn't work. Right, they're learning how to do rapid testing at the borders for people who are essential workers who have to transport goods between the provinces so that they can continue to come and go from outside Atlantic Canada and back and forth without having to stay home every 2 weeks. They're also learning to kind of, you know, they're looking at other regions and realizing what's worked and what hasn't, and figured out ways to kind of modify this thing as we go along, you know. I think in the early days of this, there would have been requirements across the board when they would have an outbreak, for instance, in New Brunswick. In this case, what they've done with the most recent outbreak is isolated to just that region and just particular people who are most at risk. They've kind of tried to allow people to continue to have the freedom to live everyday life within reason. They've tried to modify it as best they can.
I was going to ask you about that, if there are lockdown tools that they're ready to deploy if that thing keeps spreading.
Yeah, I mean, I think they will just increasing the restrictions. Right now, they set up a boundaries where if you live within this boundary of the zones that are considered more at risk, you're living under more restrictions. They're limiting the number of people who can gather. They're telling people not to stop in those communities and shop. They're almost treating those zones as quarantine zones in themselves. And I suspect that if these cases get worse, we're going to see even more tightening. There's a region in northern New Brunswick where they've actually really tightened the border with Quebec, and they're turning away students who live on a First Nations on the Quebec side of the border who normally attend high school in New Brunswick. And they're saying, no, you have to stay home now until this passes, and you're going to have to take online classes instead of showing up in person. So they're kind of, as they go along, they're kind of adjusting the restrictions in response to the size of the problem.
You touched on something a few minutes ago that I wanted to get a little more from you, which is that in spite of perhaps a tourism slowdown, the real estate market is hot. How big a change is that from normal? And what do the real estate agents say? How hot is this getting?
Yeah, I mean, in some parts of the region, it's actually getting quite hot, which is really unusual for some of those regions. I mean, in Cape Breton, they're not really used to bidding wars and having multiple offers and kind of very aggressive buyers. That's a new phenomenon for Cape Breton and, frankly, for a lot of rural areas in Atlantic Canada. But if you talk to realtors there, they're saying that this is a whole new world for them, and they're trying to figure out a way to help people buy homes. A lot of them are coming from Ontario and out of the region, buy homes without even walking through these properties because of the two-week quarantine restrictions. A lot of people are staying out of the region and basically buying homes and properties remotely, virtually, based on a FaceTime video. And they're entering a very aggressive market, and some of them are actually bringing kind of an Ontario mentality, if I can call it that, to the real estate market, which is a new phenomenon here. Things in some areas, it really has changed quite a bit. And some of the realtors say it's unprecedented in terms of the volume of sales that they're seeing.
Well, that's kind of my last question, which is, what is the lasting legacy, I guess, and the future of this bubble and what it means for Atlantic Canada, which is, a group of provinces that have had some tough economic times, but now with the way they've handled COVID and with half or more of the companies in the world moving to remote work, is this an opportunity here?
There's a lot of people who are wondering that, and I think that's the million-dollar question, is what is this going to mean for the Atlantic region in the long term? There are already companies that are kind of openly selling that idea that come move your operations here or move your workers here. They can work safely, and remotely, but without a risk of a shutdown, without it, impacting your business. There's no question there are a lot of industries that are going to need to recover from this, like they will in other parts of the country. The tourism sector, as we've talked about, has been particularly hard. But I do think that will bounce back as long as the visitors return. But I do think long term, there is an opportunity here for the region to kind of sell itself as a safe place to be. And I think there's some appeal in the middle of a pandemic, for that kind of approach. And we are already seeing very early signs that people are looking at this as kind of a safe haven. I guess the big question is, will it last? How many people will actually relocate here? But there are business people, there are realtors, there are, a lot of ordinary folks who are kind of saying, hey, we got a good thing going here. Let's keep it going and let's try to capitalize on this.
It certainly sounds appealing from where we sit, Greg. And thank you for explaining a little bit and opening up the bubble for us.
My pleasure, Jordan. You take care.
Greg Mercer of The Globe and Mail. That was The Big Story. For more, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. Look us up on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. Email us anytime, TheBigStoryPodcast, all one word, at rci.rogers.com. And head to your favorite podcast platform and please subscribe and rate and especially review. We're so close to 1,000 reviews on Apple and I want you to get us there. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
My name is John Cullen, and I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and curling. It's the story of Broomgate, how a single broom, yes, a broom, turned friends into foes and almost killed the 500-year-old sport of curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.